I would like to go to our quote of the day. This is a very good quote. Money will only make you more of what you already are. Don't think that money is going to somehow make you into a better person. It will just make you more of who you are. I would like to look at some scripture verses about debt. I don't know what you think about debt, but the Webster's Dictionary says it is a state of being under obligation to pay or repay someone or something in return for something received, a state of owning. And there's some verses that are often associated with this thing of debt. And probably the one we hear the most is Proverbs 22:7, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. That is the one we probably hear the most. Another one is, the wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. And here we see the importance of paying back our debt. And it bothers me tremendously when someone has a debt, especially whether it's a family member or a friend, and they know that this person they borrowed from has a lot of money, and they have this idea that they don't need it. And so the person that has the money is gracious enough to lend it, and then the borrower has the attitude that he doesn't need it anyway, I'm not going to be in a hurry to pay it back. And I will assure you that that happens more than you would think. And so be on guard for that. If you have a debt with anybody for that matter, but especially a family member or church brother, I don't care if they have $10 million. I don't care. It is your obligation to pay them back. And it's pretty strong language here. Someone who borrows and doesn't pay back, it says the wicked does that. So very strong language there on that. All right, so this thing of debt is not a completely new concept. We read about usury in the Old Testament. We hear about debt there. And the American system has made debt so normal that we almost cannot imagine in which we live in a world without debt. And you probably can because you don't have a whole lot of assets at this point. However, as you go into life, you're going to realize that debt is very normal, and in America especially. We get married, we go into debt on a home. We go into debt in a business. We go into debt with whatever we do. And I think it's important how we view this thing of being in debt. There are those who view debt as just simply a part of life. We had a lady in our accountability group, SALT class. We had a lady in our SALT class, and very nice lady, nice family. And it was some years later, I said, do you have a plan? I just assumed they did. Do you have a plan for getting your house paid off? Like, what's your plan? Do you have a goal? And she said, my husband, he does not understand why it would be necessary to pay off our house. It is just a part of life. And she said, you know, I decided that's not a hill that I have to die on. It's just something she just said, okay, it's fine. It's not that big of a deal. But that is actually a very normal story for America, is that we're just in debt. There's no plan. There's no plan for getting out. It's just a part of life. And so I would like to give a little bit of a different perspective on that today. I remember hearing from an Anabaptist minister that gave the thought that it's good to be in debt so that you don't buy things you shouldn't. I was perplexed. I do not agree with that. I do not agree with the fact that you should just be in debt your whole life so that it motivates you to not buy things. I think that's a very poor motivator. And so I'm just saying, it's pretty normal. This kind of thought on debt is pretty normal. If we have a mortgage, if we have a loan on your house, you should have a goal of paying that off. So in some form or another, have a goal of getting out of debt. You should have that in your plan. It is very freeing to come to the place where you can say, I am out of debt. I know it's a little bit of a radical concept there. You can afford to take more time off if you don't have a mortgage on your house. It actually frees you up to do ministry. It frees you up to serve others. Imagine going on a, say, three-month mission trip, and you have a $2,000 mortgage. Well, when you're gone, you're not working, and so there is $6,000 that you're going to have to come up with while you're gone and you're not working, and that is fairly normal. You're going to find that very normal for quite a number of years. However, we should come to the place where we can be free of that, I believe. Maybe it's not until you're 40 or 50, but at some point, I think we should have a goal of paying that off. Now, I know this, it can depend so much. If you have a $100,000 place, or maybe you have a farm, you're trying to make a living, and you put in dairy cows, and I don't know anything about that, but maybe you're in debt $1 million. And I understand there is a huge difference there as far as how long that will take. I am just being very general here. There is a verse that people use to say that all debt is wrong, that you can never go into debt. And that is Romans 13:8, owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. The verse right before that says, render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. So he was coming down talking about our government, how we are supposed to be subject under them, and then he goes, owe no man anything. So I'm not saying that has no merit. I am not saying that debt is just perfectly fine. I do think it's a little bit out of context to take one verse in Scripture and say it is never okay under any circumstances to be in debt. If you find yourself there, that's totally fine. So let's just look at some facts about debt. The lender sets the terms for the debt. You do not walk into a bank and say, I would like a loan for 5%. You're going to go in there as the beggar and say, please, can I have some money? And they're going to say, well, you can under these circumstances, and we will give you X amount of interest. And so you are not in control. The lender sets the terms. You either accept it or walk away. Most times when someone goes into debt, there is a deliberate choice. And I understand there are rare cases where debt is inherited from parents, and you could have a medical emergency. One of you came up to me and said that there are those times, and I agree. I am generalizing. I know that there are times when you have to go into debt for something like that. I am not talking about that. Most times, it is a deliberate choice on whether we go into debt. We have a home mortgage because we decided to buy a house. We could have rented, but we decided to buy a house. And this one is really important. I really want to drill this home. It is not optional to repay a debt. Please remember that. There must be a plan in order for you to repay the debt. It is just simply not ethical to take a loan out and to not repay, which is why I am very much against bankruptcy. That could be a whole nother topic in itself. There are different levels of bankruptcy, and hopefully we don't have to go there, but there are bankruptcies where things are put in place where you can still pay back what you owe. Please, I hope this class keeps any one of you from getting there. And please remember that not paying your debt affects relationships. So if you don't pay your debt, it is going to be really awkward. And I personally would be pretty hesitant, especially in my position as church leadership, to loan out money to a fellow church brother for the very reason of relationships. I do not want to come to church and give a holy kiss to my brother that I know owes me money and is not paying me. That is going to cause problems. And so I'm just saying, be very careful. I think it's perfectly fine, and it happens here in our church. And we have a brother in our church that is extremely generous in helping out our young married couples. And I don't know, I'm not sure what some of us would do without that. And so I bless people who are willing to do that. But if someone is willing to do it for us, let's just make sure that we take paying back seriously. Debt can make you feel like you have more than you actually do. You can live in a nice house. You can live an elaborate lifestyle. You can have a $500 espresso machine and a huge house and brand new vehicles, and everything can appear as though you are a wealthy person. And that can all come crashing down very quickly. It gives the false illusion that you have more than what you do. And so what we tend to do is we're living this high lifestyle, and this high lifestyle causes us to spend a lot more money than we should, and it's all an illusion. So be very careful with consumer debt. There are auto loans. This is known as consumer debt, so just know that like a house loan, a home mortgage, is not considered consumer debt. Consumer debt is just simply what it says. Auto loans, car loans, credit cards, personal loans, store financing. Don't ever go into Aaron's or someplace and buy a couch and put it on payments. Please don't ever do that. Buy now, pay later. You can go out here to Cash Express or any of these places and actually get a loan to go on vacation. Now, I cannot imagine going to a place like that and paying 20% interest or whatever it is and pulling out a loan, going to Florida and having a grand time and coming back and paying off the vacation that you took months ago. And that is unfortunately how a lot of people live. And when you do this, when you do a class, SALT class, whatever, with locals, you understand how common some of these things are. So be very careful. We're going to start with auto loans here. Actually, sorry, I have one more. Consequences of debt. I'd like to go over these. Debt often becomes a cycle or a way of life. It can cause anxiety and stress to the borrower. It can increase the temptation to buy things we can't afford. And I already mentioned this one. It gives an illusion of wealth. Oops. Leave those up for you a little bit if you want to write those down. I would like next to look at an example of a $50,000 vehicle. So, say one of you young guys, you really want a truck. And you don't need a diesel, but you really want to buy a diesel. And I'm going to break down, we're going to break down some math here into how all of this works. And hopefully, maybe it can keep someone from getting yourself into a situation like this. And I do want to give a clarification here. There are times for your business, like maybe you're a barn hauler. You have to go out and borrow money for that. Maybe your business requires that. That's totally understandable. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking, it's giving the lesson of a car loan in general and also what it can do if we can't afford it and just really want it anyway. So what I have here is a five-year car loan breakdown. So what we have is a $50,000 truck, and the terms on it is 60 months or 5 years, and we're going with a fair credit. I imagine most of you probably don't have excellent credit with where you're at right now. That takes time. So we're going with a fair credit, and the monthly payment is about $1,062 per month. The total amount paid over 5 years is $63,720, and you are paying $13,720 for interest on that truck. All right. So, all at once, you have a truck that you have just paid $63,720. Now, this is over a five-year period. How much do you think this truck is worth after 5 years? Does anyone want to guess? How much? About 25. Would y'all agree with that? If you took good care of it. True. If you got salt, it'd be less than that. So, from what I could figure out, and yeah, I totally agree with you, you might sell the truck for about $27,500. Do you know what the depreciation is on that? You are out $36,220 over 5 years. That's $600 a month. Now, again, if you're using something like this for business, it's all part of your work, fine. But generally speaking, car loans do not make any sense. You buy a vehicle, something good to remember is that if it has wheels, it depreciates. Generally speaking, that's how it works, whether it's campers or, yeah, actually, mobile homes are a little bit different. I have seen some amazing things with mobile homes in this area, if you take really good care of them. But generally speaking, if it's got a wheel, you're probably gonna lose. So remember that. I will say, I went and bought a pickup some years back, and it was cheaper, you've probably run into this, it was cheaper to put it on payments than to pay cash. And that can be very frustrating. In that case, save the $1,500, fine. Just pay it off the first month. Go ahead and set it up on payments if you'd like, and then pay it off immediately so you don't have to pay the interest, because a dealership gets paid by the financing company to get you set up. And so that's how they're able to sell it for less. Anyone have a comment on that? All right. Yeah, it's frustrating, actually, how much financing has gotten into everything. I even heard, assuming this is true, that supposedly you can get your roof financed, like get a new roof and you put it on payments. I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea. Do what? Okay. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like more and more, I don't know how you're going to repo a roof. Not quite sure how that would work. Okay, we're going to get into credit cards a little bit here. If we have, we're going to make time. I asked Josiah, we're going to talk about houses a little bit. Joe's a realtor, and I told him to give us about 5 minutes of pointers on buying a house. So be prepared for that. How many of you have a credit card? All right. Debit card? More? Good? Okay. I'm just saying here, be very careful with credit cards. I have credit cards. I use credit cards. The credit card debt in America is close to $1.3 trillion and is climbing fast. How many of you were ever on a plane and you had this promotion being thrown at you or all of these things in the mail that come? We all know what that's like. There are those, Dave Ramsey would be one of those, probably most of you are aware. He would say to cut them up, get rid of every last one of your credit cards. I think that's a high road. If someone wants to do that, that's fine. If you get really desperate, or if you just want to run on a debit card, you can do that as well. I personally have a bit of a different theory. What I do for myself, well, I use a credit card, but my theory is this. Take, for example, buying gas. You are going to buy gas no matter if you're driving down the road, let's say 1 month you're running tight, you're probably not going to run out of gas because you want to save gas money on your budget. If you're in business, we used to run up a credit card debt pretty high. We bought things, we sold things, and so it made perfect sense that we got our 2% cash back. There are instances, especially in business, where I think it just makes sense to have a credit card and get rewards. The difference, though, is there has been study after study after study that shows that we spend more on consumer, like restaurants, Amazon. There's all kinds of things that we spend more money on with a credit card than we would with cash or check. And I know we don't like to believe that. We think that, well, I'm different. I really don't spend that much more. I don't think we're that different. They've done a lot of studies, and it affects us differently to use a credit card. So just for whatever that's worth, just as a word of caution on that, I think the hype of the points is overhyped. I think that we spend a whole lot more on our loose spending than we ever do on the rewards that we get. I personally believe that. You may disagree with me on that. That's fine. I'm just going to give you an example. If your credit card bill is $1,500 for the month, and I'm not sure, did I figure 1.5% on? I think I figured 1.5% on this. You earned a whopping $22.50 for the month if you had a $1,500 credit card bill. And you probably spent a lot more than $22.50 on just the looseness of a credit card. So there's this thing, I don't know, we probably all know that one person that loves to go around and talk about how they went on a trip and how they went here and how they have this credit card and that credit card, and we went on this vacation and we didn't spend a dollar. Have y'all ever heard of people like that? They know how to rig the system perfectly. I personally believe that it's a little bit overhyped. I think we have this idea that we can do all of this stuff for free, and what can happen is you have all of these credit cards you sign up for. They have yearly fees. Some of them do. And be very careful. If you sign up for a credit card, know what the yearly fee is. Some yearly fees are, I think, $95 is pretty common. Some have no yearly fees. And some, like really high-powered travel ones, might be $300 to $400. And so you can have all of these credit cards that you've got these bonuses on, and you can forget about it if you don't close them down, and before you know it, you are paying yearly fees without realizing it. Never, ever, ever hold a balance on a credit card under any circumstances. Only use a credit card if you're going to use one as a method of payment. Don't ever try to get yourself out of a financial jam by putting things on a credit card. It is only a means by which you make a payment. Should be. This is interesting here. This is very current. This article was written 5 days ago. The overall average for credit card interest rates is 25.35%. So that's not a very good way to live, to hold a balance on 25%. This is how credit card companies make their money. And then you have personal loans, which I talked about earlier, personal loans with family, friends. I have a question on your study period paper. How do you feel about lending money from family and friends? Something like that. So y'all can be thinking about that. And then you have business debt, and business debt is not consumer debt. You should be making money with your business debt. It should be making money for you. And again, with business debt, there should be a plan as to when we pay it off. We should not just have business debt forever. I would like to look at, as we look at a home mortgage, we're going there next, just some basic terms that we use. They use. A mortgage is basically a fancy term for a home loan. So it's a loan used to buy a house. Down payment is what you pay up front when buying a house. Principal is the actual amount that you borrow. So you have interest, you have principal. Your principal is the actual amount that you borrowed. Interest is what it costs you to borrow the money. Loan term, length of time to repay the loan. And the monthly payment, what you pay each month toward the loan. Very simple, just so we're all on the same page there. And there are certain things that appreciate in value, as in a home. So if you buy a home, it should appreciate in value, which means that it's going to gain value. It is the opposite of the car. The car is going to depreciate instead of appreciate. Depreciation is when a home loses value. And equity, you're probably, hopefully you're familiar with these terms. Best example I can use, if you pay $200,000 for the house, and after a number of years it's worth $250,000, even though you have a loan for $200,000, you have $50,000 worth of equity in the home. And market value, what a home would sell for today. All right, so we're going to have a little bit of fun here again. We are going to take a 15-year home mortgage. All right? The loan amount is $300,000. We're going with an interest rate of 5.3, which is a little bit low for right now. And the monthly payment is $1,325 interest and $1,085 principal, which this is a 15-year, so it's going to be a little higher than a 30-year. The monthly payment total is $2,410. So after 15 years, if you run the full 15 years out on your home, you're going to have paid $433,000 and, well, $433,800 on the house. You paid a total of interest of $133,800. Now, do y'all think this is a bad deal? Not sure. All right, I want to show you something else. I just want to show you how appreciation works. All right, was this a good buy? So long term, if you go decades back, appreciation on homes is 2-3% every year. The last 15 years, because of coming out of the Great Recession as well as COVID, it is extraordinarily high at 5.7%. So this home was purchased for $300,000. And it is now worth $687,000. And they have $433,000 in it. Was that a bad deal? No. Now you're confident it was not. All right, so there you have it. $300,000 plus the $133,000 interest means that they have $433,000 in it. They now have equity in the property in the amount of $253,200. And I just use that as an example. A 30-year would look a little different. I think I'm going to skip over this part here. I would like to talk a little bit about renting versus buying a home. Now, how many of y'all think that renting is a waste of money? Just be honest, it's fine. It's what we're all, it's what everybody says. All your financial peer advisors say that, right? All right, it's fine, good. That is what we normally hear. I am going to give a little bit of a defense for renting. I don't rent. This is my personal view on it, that after you get married, it is perfectly okay and maybe better to rent for a couple of years. Now, I want to show you how it can actually come out not too far apart. We're going to talk about owning. All right, so your property taxes, we're going to go with, I went with more what's around here. Property taxes around $1,200. Your insurance, and this is if we go with CAM. If you would go with commercial insurance, it would be higher. The interest, look at this, is $15,000 per year in interest alone at 6%, which is about where things are at right now. So if you own that home, you're going to be paying $15,000 per year. And I put on miscellaneous repairs at $1,000, and that could actually be really low. Depending on what you get into, that number could be $5,000, it could be $7,500, it could be whatever. But we're going conservatively here. Your total yearly expenses are $18,300. And this is not what people talk about when they say it's so much better to rent or to own versus renting. Okay, on the renting side, you have $0 property taxes. That is on the owner. Your rent price, we're going with $1,500 a month. Should probably be a little bit higher. The content insurance, if you have insurance with CAM on your appliances and your furniture and all of that, let's just say you have $400 a year on that. You're not paying any in interest. And I put down miscellaneous repairs, $100. Maybe you'll go buy a little bit of mulch for the flower beds. It's not your property, so you're not going to invest a lot into it. Now, in renting, your total yearly expenses was $18,400. You see a lot of difference? Can anyone tell me there's still something that I'm not mentioning that makes a difference in all of this? Okay. So on the bottom here, we have $18,300, $18,400. Is there anything else that affects any one of those numbers?
When you rent, you're not going to end up with anything.
Okay.
Your price, your costs are what you pay for living there for a year, but you don't end up with anything. Whereas if you own, you'll end up with a house eventually.
Okay. Okay. Did I not add it up right?
18.5,
I think. 18.5, okay. So what I have not put in consideration here, Joe and I were having this discussion back there. This house, if it appreciates, say, 4% a year, which I think would be a good average, that is what you would have in addition to owning it. So it comes out about even, according to this, but if you figure in the appreciation of the property, let's say if you take good care of it, you're actually going to come out a little better by owning. My whole point in all of this is that it's not as big of a difference as some people make it out to be. We had an air conditioner unit go out. It cost $8,500. Okay, so if you were to add that $8,500 into that 1 year of owning, you really wouldn't be much different than renting. Much better off either way. So anyway, I'm just saying this. I am personally a fan of owning a home, but I'm more saying this as you get started and as you get married, and there's a lot of other things. You have a wedding. You have all kinds of other things to deal with. Your first year of marriage, you shouldn't have a lot of stress. And I don't think renting is a bad option for a couple of years. Joe can give his thought on that if he'd like. All right. Some things to consider before going into buying a home. Joe, I'll ask you to come up in just a little bit. How stable is your job? That is something to consider. Are you financially stable? Are your finances in good order? Are you ready for a significant financial commitment? How long do you plan to live in the area? What can you afford? And I want to throw this in here yet, too. I have heard that you should never borrow more than 4 times your annual income. So if you make $50,000 a year, you should not borrow more than $200,000. That's a good rule of thumb to go by. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I also read where an interesting percentage here. Your mortgage payment, property taxes, and insurance or mutual aid payments should not exceed 35% of a family's net spendable income, or the family will probably struggle financially. So you add your mortgage payment, your property taxes, your insurance, and that should not exceed 35% of your total income. All right, Joe, why don't you come up? I have a couple of things to add in the end, but give us some tips on home buying. You want to turn this on, Jared?
All right, thank you, Julian. I feel like he's laid the groundwork very well. So outside of teaching Bible memory, I work as a real estate agent here locally. I've been doing it for around five, six years now, and I've helped over 30 families this past year buy a home and sell a home. So I really enjoy it, and it is my passion. I really enjoy working with people and selling stuff, so I enjoy that part of it. Building your credit score. When you ask for your credit cards, I was impressed. How many of you have a credit card? I think I'm a big proponent of buying a home. It depends on your situation. Every situation is different. If you want to rent, I'm not opposed to renting if it fits your plan better. I do think you are financially better buying a home. So first thing is your credit score. You have to have a credit card. Or the easiest, cheapest way to build credit is through a credit card. I've seen people buy a vehicle and say, I'm going to buy a vehicle and put it on payments just to build my credit. Don't do that, okay? You're losing out. So how do you build a credit score? That's something you can come talk to me later. There's a secured card you can buy that you can put a down payment on, and then you pay it back. A credit score is basically a track record of how good you are at paying your bills. So if you want to work with a bank or whatever, they're gonna want a credit score, wanting to show some kind of history of how you're spending money. Unless you're borrowing money from your dad, or Julian went over this as far as a local brother in the church. It's not something I would probably recommend, but it is an option, and it can be a. When I bought my first house, I borrowed money from my dad. He helped me buy my first house, so there's that. All right, just some tips on buying a property. I don't have a lot here. Be in tune with your local real estate market. A lot of you guys probably buy trucks. So if you buy a truck, you don't go out one day and I like this truck and buy it. You kind of watch them. I'm guessing you watch trucks and you kind of know what you should spend for a truck. Same goes for a house. Keep an eye on your market, what a house is worth. And if you watch the market, you'll know when a good deal comes up. Get on Zillow and watch days on market too. So if a house has been on the market for a while, you know you probably get a better deal on it. Find a good real estate agent. This is things I've had before I got my real estate license. I was kind of against real estate agents. Why would I need an agent to buy a house? I was actually a for sale owner one time too. So find you a good agent. And they can help you a lot. Oftentimes you think, well, why would I buy an agent? Why would I just go straight to the seller? And this is a mistake I see a lot of people make. You see a sign in the yard, hey, house for sale. Let me call the listing agent and see about buying this house. One thing I want you to remember, that the sellers hired a listing agent to represent their best interest. Okay? So can that agent represent the seller and the buyer's best interest? No. Okay, they're looking out for the sellers. They're not looking out for you. So my tip is find an agent outside of that transaction and have them work for you. When you do a lot of volume, it's just like any other job. You have a profession, you get good at it if you do a lot of times. If you buy a house, you might buy a house once every 15 years. You honestly don't really know what you're doing. So all right, and then also as far as your realtor will also have, like for me, I have several lenders that I work with. that I know will look out for my clients, that will give them good rates, good deals. Very important to have a solid lender to work with. Figure out what you can afford. Very important is to, if you have a good credit score, you got decent income, talk to your lender and he will tell you what you can afford, kind of the ballpark. I see a lot of people, they'll go out and they'll say, I want to buy a house. They start looking at houses and I see a bunch of houses. They get their heart set on the house and then they go talk to the lender. Okay, well, you're looking at a $400,000 house, but your budget's $300,000. There goes, you wasted a bunch of time looking at properties you couldn't afford. Don't do that. Talk to a lender, figure out what you can afford. Tip number two, don't let the list price scare you away. A lot of times we see a property like, these guys are crazy. They never get this for that. And probably the truth is they're not getting that for that. It's been sitting in the market for 60 days. So don't let the list price scare you away. It's always, let's say, if you find a house you like, you think it's overpriced, make them an offer. You know, it's there's nothing against making people an offer. Also, and look out for, I see a lot of buyers that get into the market and they, they see a house and the house has something a little weird about it. The door's green, something's off about it, and they'll walk from that house. I don't want that house. It's got a green door. The layout's a little weird. Something that you can change yourself. If you're handy with construction, don't be scared of a fixer-upper. Look for something that's a little bit off. A lot of people don't want to buy a house and have to put money to fix it up. So there's less buyers for that market. So if you can target that market, you can often get a better deal on a house. Quick example. Recently, I helped a young couple buy a home here. And the house was listed for $410,000. We actually just closed on it last week. And they were their price was about, they wanted to be at $400,000 on it, was kind of what they were thinking. So the house had been sitting on the market for 60 days. So after some discussion, we offered them $385,000 for it. We said, okay, we'll give you $385,000 for the house. Send them an offer, and this is where your agent can come in, send an offer in for you. The sellers counted back at $395,000. They will take $395,000 for it. And I talked to the buyer, do you want to give $394,000? Do you want to give $395,000 for it? They really like the house, and okay, yeah, we'll give $395,000 for it. But I kind of knew, I was like, at $385,000, I feel like if we stay firm at $385,000, the seller will go for $385,000. So I just told the seller, I said, well, we're going to stay firm at $385,000 right now. And told him that 15 minutes later, he said, sounds good, let's do it. So just things like that. If you're working by yourself, you're not in the profession of doing it, you can often get taken advantage of. And I hate seeing people getting taken advantage of, so watch out for that. And then also, so we got $385,000, then we walked through the house, and there's so after you get a home under contract, do a home inspection. Very important, $500, and somebody goes through and picks the house apart. And we found holes in the ductwork. We found a lot of things that would have cost them money had they bought the house, and these things would have popped up and they would have been, the seller's not going to pay for it at that point. So do a home inspection, and then your agent will send up a repair list. And so like for me, I said, hey, we want you to fix the ducts. We want you, the shower didn't have any doors on it. So we want you to put glass shower doors on it. You'd be surprised, and we sent him a pretty good long list, and the seller did everything for him. So yeah, I think that's all I have on that. If you have any questions afterwards, feel free to talk to me. And it is, I work with a lot of buyers, but first-time home buyers are definitely my favorite. I love seeing young families get into a home, and when you're younger, I think it's when you're working towards something, maybe working toward buying a truck, I think instead of buying a truck, maybe look for buying some property. I think you'll be further ahead. And you ladies, I know my sister, I was thinking about this, like having a goal to save up for. My sister, she had a goal in her mind to save up to buy her furniture. She wanted to save up money, and when she got married, she wanted to be able to buy her furniture. I thought that was cool. Just have a goal in mind. If you don't have a goal in mind what you're saving your money for, you can easily kind of spend it on stuff you don't really need. So I hope that helps you guys, and, yeah, good luck out there.
Thanks, Joe. That was very good. I would tell you, I did not realize how much a realtor does. This thing of for sale by owner is a joke. So if you ever sell a place, you are not going to get what you think you're saving on a realtor fee, you are losing more than you think. So, am I on? There we go. So anyway, there are people that have this idea that realtors just sit there, sign papers, and collect checks. And we have had properties that took a tremendous amount of work. And Joe worked with us on it and was able to get it sold. So I have a renewed appreciation for realtors, I guess. So anyway, so that was more on the home buying. Again, I'm just telling you, we were talking about it here, like right before I came up, I think it was Scott that was saying that if you maybe have an interest in going to missions or depending on what you're looking for, that all plays into this thing of home ownership versus renting. You're going to be a lot more freed up if you're willing to rent. And lastly here is on paying off debt. There's three main ways to pay off debt. One is the snowball method, where you list, either way you do it, you should list all of your debts, largest to smallest. And the snowball method is where you hit your smallest ones first, and the whole reason for that is to build momentum. It gives you a lot of motivation, and you get one loan done, and so you're working on the next, and then you're working on the next. Hopefully you don't have that many. That's very common for a lot of people. And then the avalanche payment method is where you prioritize your highest interest rate, where you go after that first. Maybe there is a smaller loan, but you're going to leave that one there because you're paying higher interest on the other one. And I'll add to this, if it is a church brother or a friend or a family member, I would prioritize those no matter what the interest rate is for the sake of relationships. Then there's also, be a little bit leery of this, the debt consolidation loans. There's people who will take all of your loans and then just give you one loan at a lower rate. What that can do, it can take a little bit of motivation out, like you just have this big debt you're working on, and also it can kind of relax us, like, oh, okay, now I'm back into control again. I want to tell you, I know of a person personally right now that is in some financial pain, and he is allowing, like, this whole credit card thing, he got himself into this, and he is allowing the pain of this financial situation to hit him very deep and very hard. And he's allowing that to completely change the way he looks at credit cards, spending, and all of this, and allow it to do that. And that's the thing of the consolidation loan, is that it kind of take that away. Like, it kind of takes away the consequences of our actions a little bit, even though we still need to get it paid. I have a little bit on savings, but we're just out of time, so we will probably get into savings a little bit tomorrow. Tomorrow we'd like to get into, I tell you what, there are so many guys on YouTube that have horrible financial advice that think they know everything. And I'm not saying I know everything, but there are so many voices out there that you can listen to. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, get rich quick. Proverbs has a lot to say about that, investing, some of that stuff. So be ready for that tomorrow. Thank you very much for your attention. You are dismissed.